one and a two and a three and a four.
An underground venue, that's what it would have been referred to as, and the audiences were really into their music and they really got what Led Zeppelin was about. It was magnificent.
I say what? Ho, this is Brian, call me the Mountain Man Gardener, coming to you from Ramble On Towers Dungeon Studio, back in the dungeon this week, in scenic Hesper, Ontario. You are listening to Ramble On Radio, episode 102, on the Off the Cuff Podcasting Network. Still not used to saying 100 before the episodes. Ramble On Radio is the only Led Zeppelin podcast on this or any other known internets. Be sure to go to rambleonradio.com for all your Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any links I might happen to mention during the show. You can subscribe to Ramble On Radio through iTunes. I'm going to go over this in a minute. I'll go over all this in a minute. But on Podbean at I Am Brian, damn it. Listen on Spreaker and check it out at Ramble On Radio on YouTube. I have some previous episodes that I've recorded on video are there, and I'm gonna have to do one soon in the near future just to get a fresh one up. And also check us out on Facebook, Google Plus, and at Ramblon Blog on Twitter. And I want to go backwards over the iTunes thing. I always tell you, leave a review on iTunes and follow me on Spreaker. I want to make sure this was an email comment in Facebook. Somebody wasn't sure how to do the leave a review. So if you go to iTunes, if you download this on iTunes or just have an iTunes account, all you have to do is Google Ramble On Radio. It'll come up with the podcast, and then there's a spot in there to leave a review. I'm not actually sure where it is in there. I think you can leave some stars beside it. On Spreaker, you don't leave a review on Spreaker. On Spreaker, just follow me. Just click follow. So you have to sign up, log in on Spreaker, and then click on the follow. And that's all you have to do. You can listen to it, download it there. You can listen to it right there. You can do all that stuff on Spreaker. And it goes back about 10 or 12 episodes because they only have a little bit of space. And I'm working on a very limited budget. But I do want to sort out, somebody asked some time ago about getting some of the earlier episodes. And I want to get them on some sort of server space, figure something out so you can at least download them and listen to them if you want to. I'm thinking maybe of offering, it's about 2 gigabytes worth of data, so I'm thinking of maybe bringing $20 or something, and I can offer them all on a USB that I can mail to you. I don't know. What do you think? Are you interested in that? Is anybody interested in that? Email me if you are. And I'll consider it if there's an actual interest there. But otherwise, you can go back and listen to 10 episodes or so on Spreaker. And just follow me on Spreaker. And it's on iTunes where you leave a review. And I'm on iTunes right now. Can you hear me clickety-clicking? So what I'm going to do is figure out how to do this. Podcasts at the bottom on podcasts. Ramble On Radio. It's the very first podcast that pops up. There's only two podcasts actually pop up. And ratings and reviews. Or it says ratings and reviews. And then it says click to rate. And you can... So there's details. There's ratings and reviews. And I've got three reviews. This is the Canadian one. And I've got three reviews. All of them good. Thank you, by the way. Thank you. A 4, a 5, and a 4. But that was me. So it was just me testing the system myself. So yeah, what you would do is go under ratings and reviews tab. Click to rate. It's 1 to 5 stars. And then once you do that, it kind of opens up the actual review portion. I just called it great. Oh, that's not good. Okay. So that's all you have to do. Just go to iTunes, search it, and it comes up. All right. So much to talk about this week. If you're on Twitter, if it's 12/21, July 23rd, if you're on the Twitter right now, you've seen that I have posted a cryptic message getting ready to record episode 1 or 2, which will feature a big time interview. My iPad is a clue who it is, and I have a picture of my iPad, and it's a musician standing outside a stage door. And his face is actually obscured by my Google Maps app. But it's irrelevant, actually. That's a bit of a tease. The picture is Jack White, and it's not Jack White in the interview. But the picture was taken by Scarlett Page, daughter of Jimmy Page, has a new book coming out, has raised the money for her book, and I have a great interview with Scarlett Page that's going to end off the show. It's been such an exciting week. On Monday, I talked to Scarlett. On Tuesday, I was down in Toronto, 5 feet away from Jimmy Page at the Masons Temple in Toronto. There was a listening, a playback, 10 songs from the bonus discs. You get a cool lanyard. I get a cool Led Zeppelin lanyard now. Plus, we got a poster on the way out of all 9 of the albums. And, of course, a card that says the listening. And I want to thank... I bitch. Oh, no, really? No. If my wife listened to the podcast, she would say, really, you bitch? You complain? You? Yes, I complain that people don't answer my emails. I complain that I send very professional, very nice messages, and I get nothing back. Well, I got to tell you. Last week, week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I contacted Scarlett Page when she put together the funding page for her Resonators book, and she got back to me within 24 hours, and has since apologized for taking so long. What? That was perfect. It was so good. But we kind of got a little tossed around. Yeah, we agreed that it would happen this week, and I sent, you know, because I wanted to leave Tuesday open and Wednesday open. And Friday, I'm doing something. Friday's actually my birthday. And no, don't send messages. Don't. But we are going to Niagara-on-the-Lake to see Pygmalion, one of my favorite plays. It's put on by the Shaw Festival there. So I'd be unavailable for. So I kind of went for the Monday, you know, 5-hour time difference. So anything after 1 or 2 o'clock your time. And then kind of heard nothing. So I actually thought the interview had fell through. And then on Sunday, I guess, I sent a message saying I haven't heard from you. And, you know, and woke up Monday morning to a message from her saying, sorry, my so apologies, blah, blah, blah. And she was so polite and so nice. And she's a great interview. And so you're going to hear Charlotte Page later on, about 40-minute interview. And I'll explain the interview because there's a few things that need to be mentioned. I had to do some splicing and editing due to Skype dropping out on us a bit early in the interview. But I'll get to that when I get to that. First, so yesterday was the July 21st. Jimmy Page was in Toronto. He was in Toronto on Monday and Tuesday. And again, they don't answer my emails, right? They don't. But I put a full court press on to get pass, some sort of media pass, to Jimmy Page's playback at the Masonic Temple in Toronto. and they were, it was the same sort of thing they did at the Olympic Studios in London. They did it in at the Paris Olympia one time. Dave Lewis goes to all the Olympic Studios ones. And I actually talked to Dave when I interviewed Dave Lewis. I talked to him a bit about it, and he says, I don't know anybody that would do a Canadian one, but, and he gave me some advice on how to approach it, not who to approach, but how, you know, who, where to find who I want to find. At the end of the day, my messages wound up on the email of Warner Brothers Canada, and they invited me. So I want to thank them. I want to publicly thank Warner Brothers Canada for inviting me. I've posted two. There's two different articles on it. One on kind of what I saw, because Jimmy did also a book stamping at Indigo at Bay and Bloor in Toronto. And I was there. I got in about 2 hours before the book stamping. I thought, I'll go over it. I'm going to see if I can get a wristband. I couldn't get a wristband. Couldn't make that one work. But I was allowed to hang around, take some pictures. And I was in and out a few times and that sort of thing. But I was able to get a couple of fairly good pictures of Jimmy. And I talked to some people. And I actually met a girl who runs the Ultimate Led Zeppelin fan page on Facebook. If you're a member of that, she's a Toronto girl. She was there with her teenage son. And he was really nice. And they both got their books stamped. And it was just so... It was. And I've been talking, messaging with her all day. She's been great. And I'm not... I don't think I'm privy to give her name. I don't think she gives her name on the page. I was looking. So I'm avoiding saying it. But if she hears this and giving her name out's fine, I'm happy to call her by name on the show. Even happy to have her on the show. Maybe one day we'll do that. Because it's quite a big page. She's doing quite well with it. So it's nice. I met some people and promoted the podcast a little bit. And I have some business cards. I handed them. You know what I got to do? I got to get... Dave Lewis does... like a paper, kind of a 5x7 type thing that he hands out at stuff, you know? He's got a pile of them. I got to get some of those printed up. I could have just walked down the line. I they were there. I could have walked down the line and handed these out, and people could have had the opportunity. You know, I just could have been... It was a real promotional opportunity in many ways there. But it didn't... Not fully taking advantage of that sort of thing. Maybe I should, but anyway. So Jimmy is at the Indigo Bay and Bloor. He's stamping his books. There's a great, happy, excited lineup. There's all sorts of people hovered around, all sorts of media around. And he I was watching him, and he was really engaged with the fans. Really, he talked to them. He looked them in the eye. Talked to them. Somebody commented he doesn't sign the books. He stamps the books. Because he doesn't have, he's not head down all day. When you sign a book, it's your head, your nose is in the book, and you don't get to see the people who are coming past. Whereas when he does this stamp, he can kind of look at you as he's stamping. Once he sets the stamp down, push, okay, he can talk, and he can talk to you for 30 seconds instead of signing the book for 30 seconds. I don't know if that's true. My feeling on it is that he sold for, I think it was $2,000. There was some, remember when the book first came out, some 5-6 years ago, it was like $1,800 and then $2,500 or something. There was two different editions, and they were signed, and they were now high quality book, high quality photographic paper, high quality everything, right? Hand bound, leather covers, that sort of thing. But they were all signed and numbered. And my feeling was he doesn't want to sign these books and then devalue those books or risk devaluing those books for those people. That's my feeling. But the stamp also has, and some people were complaining, hey, he won't sign the book, he's only stamping it. But the stamp also has the advantage of he dates it and places it. And, you know, there's only 300 or ish of those books out there. So it's not like... It's... Yeah. It's there's not not very many of each stamp, so each stamp is different. So, I mean, if he does 10 of these things for 300 each, and he signs everyone, then there's 3,000 of these books that are signed. But for each specific one, there's a different stamp. Now it's not 3,000 stamp books. There's 300 for this one, 300 for this one, 300 for this one, 300 for this one. So it kind of, you know, from a value perspective, I think it actually probably adds a little value to your book in time. I think these will be, you know, collectors. I really do. But anyways, he was engaged to fans. He was talking to fans. He was chatty. And I had a chance to, like I said, I moved all around, got some pictures. And I did get one or two fairly decent pictures. I think one of them's on the website, rambleonradio.com. Go to rambleonradio.com. I got a review of going to Indigo Bay and Bloor and going to the temple, the Mason's Temple, from a kind of a the experience standpoint. Then I have another post on the music at the Mason's Temple. The Masonic Temple, I should, I have it written down as Masons, and that's why I keep saying it. It's actually the Masonic Temple in Toronto, on Yonge Street in Toronto. And it's it was formerly Rock Pile, the bar Rock Pile. Led Zeppelin played there in 1969, February, and then August. They played two shows in one day in August at the Rock Pile. Then the next time they came back, they were at the somewhat larger it's now called the Hummingbird Center. O'Keefe Center, was it O'Keefe Center or was it Massey Hall? I have a funny feeling it was Massey Hall, actually. But that's, you know, and that was in November. They came back to Toronto again in November. Interestingly, he talked a lot while he was here, and you heard a bit of a clip. The intro, by the way, was July 24, 1973, Pittsburgh, The Ocean. And then Jimmy talking about playing in Toronto, and he was talking about how much they enjoyed Toronto, and Toronto got Led Zeppelin early, and said, but the thing is, they never came back after 1971, and that was, it was mentioned how much he liked Toronto, how much he liked the building. It was talked about a lot. Not one of the reporters, including Jeff Woods, who did the question and answer of them, asked, how come it stopped in 1971? What happened that you guys never made it back? And I asked a couple of people last night who, you know, kind of know stuff, that I met, and nobody really seemed to know. People just seemed to think that just the logistics, it's the way it happened. Don't buy it. Maybe you miss one of the tours. Maybe you don't come in 70. Maybe you don't come in 73. Maybe you don't come in 75. Maybe you don't come in 77. Maybe. But everybody else came to Toronto every time they came to town, so it's not a logistic nightmare. They're in Buffalo, you're in Montreal. Toronto's not that far. It's not a logistic nightmare. And that's three major tours in a row. You don't go to Toronto. That makes no sense. So, but nobody asked that. Would have been a good question. And actually, as their show was going on, I was wondering if they're going to take Q&A from the audience. I had something kind of in my mind to ask. But as the show, that question gnawed at me a bit. I think that's what I would have asked by the time I got, but they didn't do any sort of audience Q&A. Didn't allow me to get up and say, Brian Gardner, Ramble on Radio. Tell me about your first guitar. Everybody asked that question. That's one of those questions, I guess. Everybody seems to think he's going to come up with a different answer than the other 1,000 times. Actually, the question I had in mind for him was, I was curious whether, having redone, spent so much time with the music, whether there's any albums that he's kind of re-evaluated personally. It feels different about now, good, bad, or otherwise, and specifically in Through the Outdoor, which he has indicated he was not such a fan of. And Jeff Woods kind of touched on that a little, but didn't quite ask it that way and didn't quite get that answer. But anyway, so the playback, it was a playback of, it was about 50 minutes, 55 minutes maybe, 10 songs, and they played a video on the screen while it was playing back, but the video was, they would show like a reel-to-reel recorder, and it had a timer on it, and then it would drift off, and it would show pictures, it would show posters, it would show no videos, but it would have, but there were all sorts of little themes that came up around it, around, you know, different times you saw the track, the recorder. I apologize. I'm for the first time in ages, I'm in the Dungeon Studio, and it's after midnight, and I'm doing a late nighter, and I'm just kind of cramming it in here. So there you go. And I used to do this. All this is the normal take on this podcast, but I haven't done it this way in a long time. And actually, I was in upstate New York seeing Get the Lead Out, the guys at Get the Lead Out last week. And it occurred to me to go down and get myself some Fulkerson's Red Zeppelin. So I could be sipping on some Red Zeppelin right now, too, and just like old times. It would be just like old times. But not to be. I didn't get down, so it's not to be. And it's Perrier tonight. And I'm a bit gassy from drinking the Perrier. So it was 10 tracks from Presence and Through the Outdoor and Coda, the bonus tracks, stuff you have not heard before, in theory. And I'll get to that in a minute. And we got a little card. We got a lovely little card that tells you everything that's on it and explains it a little. Let me go through the card for you. So it says in the top, it's got the Led Zeppelin logo, deluxe editions, Presence and Through the Outdoor and Coda, the logo of each. Led Zeppelin playback, Masonic Temple, July 21st, 2015, in red, hosted by Jimmy Page. And it says, the tracks for the playback have been selected, sequenced, and compiled by Jimmy Page to show you the range of the companion audio that will be released with the deluxe editions of Presence, Into the Outdoor, and Coda. And then it is, number one, Friends. From Coda. This previously unreleased version features Jimmy Page and Robert Plant performing with the Bombay Orchestra. It was recorded on October 19, 1972 in Bombay, India. In the evening, a rough mix of a work in progress. This track was recorded on November 15, 1978 at Polar Studios, Stockholm, Sweden, and in brackets below, for this playback event only, the track has been edited from a full length of 6:58, so it's a little shorter. Desire. The working title for the Wanton song, this version is a rough mix. It was recorded February 15, 1974 on Ronnie Lane's mobile studio, Headley Grange, Hampshire. Number four, Sugar Mama from Coda. This previously unreleased track was recorded October 3rd, 1968 during the sessions for the band's debut album at Olympic Studios, London. Five, Poor Tom. This is an instrumental mix of the tracks. It was first released on Coda. It was recorded on June 5, 1970 at Olympic Studios, London. 10 ribs in all, / carrot pod pod brackets pod. This is a previously unreleased instrumental track from the Presence recording sessions. It is a reference mix of work in progress and was recorded November 17, 1975 at Musicland Studio, Munich, Germany. For this playback event only, the track has been edited from its full length of 6:49, and we got about 3.5 to 4 minutes of it, I would say. 7. Fool in the Rain, rough mix of work in progress. This track was recorded November 22nd, 1978 at Polar Studios, Stockholm, Sweden. Number 8. Bonzo's Mantra, first recorded on Coda. This alternate version of the mix, construction in progress, and was recorded September 12, 1976 at Mountain Studio, Montreux, Switzerland. For this playback event only, the track has been edited from its full length of 4:57. Number 9, Two Ones Are One, the working title for Achilles' Last Stand. This version is a reference mix, work in progress. It's recorded on November 23rd, 1975, Musicland Studio Music, Germany. And number 10, If It Keeps On Raining, the working title for When the Levee Breaks. This version is a rough mix of the tracks. It was recorded November 11, 1970, Island Studios, London, England. And then it finishes with the logos of the three albums. It says deluxe editions will be released globally on July 31st, 2015. And then it says LedZeppelin.com and has the Warner Brothers, Atlantic, and Swansong logos in the bottom right. And you can see the card if you go to Ramble On Radio. Go to my review of the material. And I have taken a picture of both sides of the card. I've also taken a picture of my lanyard, both sides, so you can see it. So it's all there. All right. The music, Friends, and I'm going to run this off my brain, off my top of my head. I don't have my written notes that I had, and I'm not going to bring up my webpage. If I don't remember it, I don't remember it. So we'll go with that. Friends, this sounds great. This has been bootlegged before. This is out there. But it sounded amazing, and it's really it's the Indian kind of music, playing with the acoustic instruments and Robert's, and it all just works really, really well. And Jimmy told a story during the question and answer that he wrote this when he lived at his boathouse on the Thames. It was it was in Pangbourne, and that boathouse was for sale about a year or two ago, I think. Not by Jimmy, he sold it many years before that, but he had this beautiful boathouse, and underneath was a boat launch. On the outside, once you went out the house, there was a boat launch underneath, and over top, like a deck over top of the boat launch. And he'd had a fight with his girlfriend at the time, and took the guitar out onto the deck, and wrote Friends. Wrote the whole thing, more or less, took it into the studio, the same sessions where they did Immigrant Song. And I think he said, Since I've Been Loving You, and he took it in and they worked on it and laid it down. But he said that even then, even that day on the deck writing it, he knew he wanted, he could hear the Indian influence in it, and he wanted to draw that out. So I guess when he got a chance to do with the Bombay Orchestra, this was an obvious one. Okay, In the Evening, a rough mix. This is already available. This was one of the ones they pre-released. This and Sugar Mama have both already been released. If you go to iTunes, you can actually buy them. They're on YouTube. They've pre-released them as promotional items. In the intro, he told a story that he used a thing called a Gizmotron. Now, it's funny, he was saying, you will never have heard of this. And I was thinking, I actually remember the Gizmotron from the 70s, from that time. They talked about it in the guitar magazines. It was invented by Lowell Cream from 10cc. And also he's from Godley and Cream. And he had lent one to Jimmy. And I think I remember reading somewhere that Jimmy had had his hands on this Gizmotron. Or I do remember reading about the Gizmotron anyway. And I knew it was the guy from 10cc had invented it. And by knowing that, if you asked me, I wouldn't be able to draw that information off the top of my head. But as he was talking about it, I was remembering, yes, I have heard this before. And the information was coming to me as he was saying it, sort of thing. You know that feeling of, oh yeah, it's drawing out of the back of this memory bank here somewhere. But anyway, he was saying, so Lowell Cream lent him his, and he took it and he recorded the intro to In the Evening with it. And then Lowell Cream heard it and kind of said, yeah, I'd like that. Nice job. You know, can I have it back now? So he does not still even, he's never seen a Gizmotron since, he said. So there you go. And this version doesn't actually have the Gizmotron on it. And how nice for you to hear me. a lot stripped down is what this would be. I guess a lot of the effects off it. The voice is very clear. And it's like, it's enjoyable. It's enjoyable, and it's different enough from the studio version of this song. Desire is a working title for Wanton Song. Really a little less guitar on it. Keyboards are a little more up in the mix, and a little less guitar. But otherwise not significantly different. Sugar Mama, we know it's a new track. It's on Coda. And he talked about, you know, it not making the first album just because it didn't make the first album. Because where were we going to put it? What were we going to take out to put it on? And he's probably right. It probably doesn't fit within that album very well. Number five, Poor Tom. This will be on Coda. The first five songs there, four of them are Coda. In the Evening is from the In Through the Outdoor. The rest are on Coda. And of course, Coda's a double, right? Poor Tom. This was an instrumental mix of the track that was recorded. So it was just an instrumental. And really what shines through on this is the drums. The shuffle. John Bonham's just doing a straight shuffle. And it sounds great. 10 ribs in all. They have this listed, by the way, as being on the In Through the Outdoor. And they have Fool in the Rain listed as being on Coda. 10 ribs in all is from The Presence, not from In Through the Outdoor. Fool in the Rain is from In Through the Outdoor. That's worth noting. It's just on my sheet. If you look up the sheet on the website on RamblingRadio.com, you will see that it is backwards there. Or it is messed up a bit. But anyway, 10 ribs and all. It's an instrumental and it's a keyboard piece. And it's, you know, they brought the always we had heard there was no keyboards at Munich when they were recording The Presence album. That it's a non-keyboard album, pretty specifically. And obviously they had the keyboards there. And but the thing was, it starts off almost like a ballad. It's almost like a pretty ballad. It could be a middle-of-the-road song. And as I was listening to it, I was thinking, is that All My Love? It's a descending a keyboard line, but it's a piano line. And it's not done with the rhythm of All My Love, but I think the chord pattern may have been All My Love. And I was trying to kind of in my head place it and sing to it and go, maybe it wasn't. But that's something to listen for everybody else when you hear it. Is that beginning part, the first minute and a half, 2 minutes, is that the same chord pattern as All My Love? And if you're a keyboard player out there who knows this stuff, let me know. Sit with it. Play with it. Figure out the two. Let me know. Steve Sauer, are you listening, Steve Sauer? I have an assignment for you. But it is, and then it builds a little bit. Guitars and drums come in, and it kind of grows a bit more. And actually goes to instead of a descending chord pattern. If you're not musical and you're going, stop talking musical terms. Descending just means goes down in tone. Let's see if my guitar is Stairway to Heaven at the end. That's descending. Right? And the ass, and then it ascends. Because you got to get back up there doing a pattern, right? But that's a descending pattern. So ascending pattern goes the other way. It goes up. That would be playing on the A there, and then you're up to a B, kind of a D something there. The tone goes up, the feel of it, the sound of it, the tone goes up. And that may not have been a good example, but that's just what I mean. So it becomes an ascending line instead of a descending line later on in the song. And a little more up-tempo. Then it stopped, and God knows where it went with it. It was something that probably had promise, but was incomplete. And like I said, you just wonder if that's something that Jones went away with, played with, and All My Love popped out. Fool in the Rain, the rough mix, the guitar's a little more up in the mix, so it's not so much a keyboard song, more of a guitar song, especially on the rhythm pattern. Other than that, not much different, I would say. Bonzo's mantra for this, Jimmy explained that he has a harmonizer, an effect that he had in his studio at home. And he kind of had it and would pull it out and use it once in a while and never really found a good use for it. He took it when him and John Bonham got together in Montreux to do this drum orchestra thing that John wanted to try. And John had the drums tuned, so this is meant to be a musical statement on the drums. It wasn't just a rhythmic pattern, it was also a melodic pattern. That was the point that Bonzo was coming up with on Bonzo's mantra. And Jimmy put on one of the tracks, Jimmy put this harmonizer on the drums, and they sound like steel drums. And apparently Bonham quite liked that, quite liked that people thought he would now play steel drums. And this track, on this variation of it, they took the harmonizer off the steel drums, or lowered it quite a bit down. So it sounds very different at times. And this was a great sound. They had great sound gear. It sounded so incredible. Everything sounded incredible. So this was really incredible. Once you got it at home and you're putting it on, Whether this Bonzo's mantra will be any better than the other Bonzo's mantra, who knows? Who knows? But that's what it is. And 2-1-0-1 is the Achilles Last Stand working version. There are some differences. There are very minor differences. I think some guitar overdubs are missing from this. It's not fully developed that way. But I could even be wrong on that. But it is what it is, and it's not significantly different, I don't think, although there are subtle differences that you will notice. And then, If It Keeps On Raining, it was the working title for When the Levee Breaks. This was done previous to the fourth sessions. These were done at Island Studios in November 1970, so that would have been for the third album, maybe for the fourth album. But I'm trying to think. I'm looking through my sheet to see where else. June 1970, Port Time. So maybe it was the third album. Maybe it was around the time of recording for the fourth album. But they were trying. They obviously were trying When the Levee Breaks. It's got higher tempo. This was the reel of all the remasters they've released, of all the stuff they've pulled out of the vault. This, If It Keeps On Raining, is. It's the one we've wanted. It's what we've wanted albums full of. It's a completely different version. They're trying something different. It's faster. It sounds like it's the 6-string guitars instead of the 12-string guitars. There's no harmonica. So it's not a muddy sound. It's not, you know, it's not got the dirge-like quality. It's not muddy sounding like the original one is. It's lighter, peppier. And very, very interesting. I think it's the gem of the 9 albums, all the remasters we've had. It's the gem of the group. And it was really nice to hear it in that setting. Now, that has become tonight. That was last night. Tonight, Jimmy Page was in New York. They played that on a radio show. I think an iHeart radio show or something. And my understanding is it's still online. So if you want to hear If It Keeps On Raining before it's released next week, that is doable. That is doable. So there you go. There's my access. My access. I got some access. And that was it. And It was a great day. I really enjoyed the day. I ran around. I took it seriously, and I worked hard, really. I was exhausted at the end of it, actually. But I was pleased with the results. I was pleased with, and I was just tickled pink to go. So, again, thank you to Warner Brothers. They, you know, and I've learned, trying to get into this one was a valuable lesson in learning how to do these things. Who I need to contact and stuff, and I'm hoping I can do more, because I really did learn, and we went to get the lead out, and I kind of learned even there, looking around me, I realized, because I was going in through the band, which is fine, but you know, the band kind of has to fight with the venue for getting you in the door sometimes, but the venue can let you in the door quite easily if they think there's something in it for them. And that's, so yeah, I've learned a fair bit about that. We'll see how that plays out. I'm hoping to do more of the access stuff by going through these new channels I figured out. We'll see. The bad news for the guys at Warner Brothers is I have your email address now. Oh, am I going to be on you guys? Oh, every time something's up. But, and now I'll be professional. I promise I'll be professional. All right. So let's get to Scarlett Page. It's about a 40-minute interview, and we're already 40 minutes into this thing. So it's going to be a long night, as it were, sure. It's going to be a long kind of interview. So Scarlett was lovely. First off, she's well intelligent, well spoken, and has one of those super sexy, perfect English accents. She's got a great laugh. She's got her father's laugh. You know, he kind of has a sharp, you know, sort of thing. She's kind of got a similar type of laugh. And I didn't do it well, by the way. That was not a good... And she was just charming and so nice. But here's what happened. So we got on. I asked her the first... I did an intro and asked the first question. And she answered about 30 seconds. And then it started clipping out. And I was getting breaks. I was getting like 3 to 5 second gaps. And I think I was getting the whole story, what she was saying. But it was, you know, there was gaps, pauses. And then it would pick it up. And I'd get a second or two. And then 5 seconds pause and a second or two. And then eventually it just cut out. So I was able to... I was able to chop and edit the first part. So it kind of sounds like she's cutting out a little tiny bit. But it's really, I've cut out the big cutouts. So instead of a 3 second cutout, it sounds like a quarter second blip. But you will get the gist of what she was saying. And then it really cut out. And I kind of, and then she dropped off completely. So she called back and said, and we said, let's try this again. She goes, I was on a roll too. I know. I prompted her and she kind of re-answered the question, but she said some different things. So when I was editing, I've kind of combined her two answers. So if it sounds like she's repeating herself, it's because, well, she probably did. But it may be it's two different answers. They got squeezed together. And then we talked about something else and it went fine. And then I asked her about Chrissy Hynde. And there was some more choppiness in there. It wasn't awful and it wasn't fatal. But it was it was a problem for the interview. So I edited, I closed everything up a bit. I think I chopped a piece of the interview out, the piece of the answer from, I tried to make it make as much sense as I could. After the Chrissy Hynde, everything flowed perfectly. So the interview is, but if things seem weird in that, up until after the end of the Chrissy Hynde question, things seem weird in the interview to you, you're kind of thinking, wait a minute, that's probably just me trying to edit it to make sense. So just know that. Just know that. It's not 100% comprehensive. There's some dropout. But otherwise, Scarlett Page, she is a photographer. She worked with Ross Halfen actually for about 18 months. But she's been 20 years in the business. She has a master's degree or something in photography and film. And she's been 20 years. She's been in the business of music photography. Having worked with Ross is what got her into music photography so much. But and she creates an odd situation for herself, I think anyway, and we didn't talk about this, but by being a music photographer, she is 1 foot sort of in her dad's business, you know. If she'd have been a sports photographer or something, then there would be no connection, and you know, so she... But she says she's never used her father's name. She's never done it. It's never been an issue. Which I believe. It's, you know, and it's fine. But so now she's doing a book on guitar players. And it's called Resonators. And it started off as a gallery exhibition. And a bunch of pictures, and meanwhile, and it's just the guitar players with the guitars. And if you go to the picture I have of Jack White on my Facebook page, it's one of her pictures, and it's one of my favorites of the list. And included in the pictures in the books, Resonators, is of course her father. He was one of the last ones she did. You'll hear all about it. She talks about it. But the book is now, it's being crowdsourced. It's a Kickstarter, I guess, right? It's Kickstarter is where it's coming from. She is she was looking for £16,000 to fund the costs of the book, of creating the book. And I mean, that's the physical cost. The pictures are taken and She's already spent the money to fly here and there, to take pictures, etc., etc. So the £16,000 is for printing costs and to pay an editor and to pay a designer and that sort of thing. So she's working at that now. This is Thursday midnight, but Wednesday night, and she was she told me in the interview she's Wednesday night she was going to have the designer, and they were going to have the pictures all over the floor and laying it out. So it's fully funded, but for another 2 weeks, there's still you can still go to crowdsource Kickstarter. And look, in the next couple of days, I will get all the information, up on the webpage. I will do that for you. Just go to rambleonradio.com, click on whatever you find there for Scarlet Page. It's £50, gets you a copy of the book, gets you a hard copy of the book, mailed anywhere in the world. And I think your name mentioned in an invitation to any kind of opening that they have. Although she only seems to be talking about a London opening at this stage. But I presume if she gets $60,000, then maybe we'd talk about a Toronto opening and a New York opening. A launch, a book launch, you know. But she's still, so you can still, just because she's met her goal, doesn't mean you stop with the crowdfunding funding. It's basically taking pre-orders for the book. So you can go on over there, get yourself the book, listen to the interview, and then decide. But she's some of the pictures are fabulous, and she is so perfect. And here it is, Scarlet Page. I was talking to Ramble On Radio just this past Monday.
Well, hello everybody. I'm with Scarlet Page, photographer. Significant photographer and, of course, daughter to Jimmy Page. And Scarlett, I hope everything is good.
All good, apart from a bit croaky, but yeah, all is very good, thank you.
Good. I know you have a few interviews this week, so thanks for squeezing me in. I'm in between People Magazine and BBC, if I have that right.
Yeah, that's right. But actually, you were the first to ask, and even though it took me a few days to come back to you, but thanks for asking.
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad to have you. So I noticed this morning you raised your $16,000 for the Kickstarter. We should tell people you have a Kickstarter program for a book called Resonators, which is a book of pictures, black and white pictures of the top guitar players.
Yep.
And
I mean, contrary to what people might think, because I had a bit of press last week, and you know, people were like, "Well, why doesn't her dad pay for it?" And you know, "Oh, why is she asking people for money?" And actually, people would be very surprised if they knew. You know, yeah, obviously, I've had a very fortunate childhood, and had a amazing dad and everything, but actually, I do live my own life, and I've had a career as a photographer for nearly 20 years now. And I started this project 2 years ago, and it was something I wanted to do in aid of a charity for Teenage Cancer Trust. And they do amazing work, as the name suggests, but they also have a lot of tie-ins with music, and they do lots of musical events. So it made a lot of sense to sort of marry it up together. And someone came to me and said, you could do a great project on guitarists. You know, you almost have a bit of a green card there to sort of get into some of the places where other people might not be able to get into. And I thought about it, and you know, for me, I've had my career for, you know, a good nearly 20 years, and I've never really sort of used Dad's name to get by, because it's something I really, really wanted not to do, basically. But I considered doing this, and then I thought, well, actually, it would be silly not. It would almost be weird if I didn't. So, you know, when contacting a lot of these people, I did introduce myself and say who I was, and because it made sense to do so. But it was the first time. Actually, there were a lot of firsts in this project. It's the first time I've done that. The first time with the Kickstarter that I've ever asked people for, ask people for something. Yeah. And I hate being filmed and video and, you know, all that. It's all sort of you pushing the buttons of things that I don't really usually like doing. But anyway, it's all really very much worth it. And the project started off as something I wanted to do in conjunction with Teenage Cancer Trust and raise some money in aid of them. And I made a list of all the top guitarists that were still with us and contacted everybody that I could. And a lot of people came back and said they'd be really happy to be involved in the project. And I've travelled all over England, and it was all self-funded as well. And I flew to America and stayed there for a week and managed to shoot 8 people. So I thought, if I'm going to go all that way, I've got to make sure I've got, you know, it's worth my while to go. And one of those people was Paul McCartney. So it was like, yeah, that was, you know, in itself, that would have been amazing. But I managed to get some more as well while I was there. And we did an exhibition last year and had all the prints signed by the artists and auctioned those off to raise funds. And then since then, it has been exhibited at a few other places as a colour project. And then we decided, because it's had such a great reception, that we really wanted to make a book out of it. And a friend of mine who works a lot with a great, well, amazing black and white photographer called Anton Corbin. I mean, he does colour too, but he's really known for his amazing black and white imagery. He's helping me design the book. And the way he designed it was predominantly, well, all black and white, and everyone really loved it. So, and it looks really timeless and quite classic that way, I think. And, you know, it works really well with the subjects.
Good, yeah. So I wanted to go backwards a bit. You were exhibiting it. Are you still doing exhibits?
Well, so now that we've... So we launched the Kickstarter a couple of weeks ago, nearly. and we've... literally, the money that we were raising in the Kickstarter was for just literally printing costs to cover, you know, that's it. There's no profits there. If we do make profits, by the way, I do hope to donate some of those to Teenage Cancer Trust, but at the minute it's just a case of getting the book out there. And I sadly do not have the funds in my own personal account to do so. Otherwise, I would have done, because I, you know, it's I don't really like sort of putting it out there, but it's amazing, and it's you know, I've been really bowled over by people's generosity and support. It's amazing. But as going back to your question, there is, yes, I think to launch the book, we might end up doing an exhibition, and any further funds that we raise will, you know, people can still buy the book and also be credited as part of those people that made the book happen. And we will use any extra funds to do a launch, and, you know, and everyone who's been involved will get invited. And so, well, that's the idea anyway. Yeah. So it's amazing, because today, yeah, we reached our goal today, and I wasn't expecting it to happen that easily, but yeah, it was really good news.
You have to be nervous when you do that sort of thing, that it's never going to happen, right? And
well, I knew that, you know, you always have that sort of first, you know, rush of people, you know, donating and everything, or pledging, and then it kind of really dies down. And I thought, well, this is the period where it's going to die down, and I need to keep getting out there and sort of letting people know about it and contacting fan sites and things, you know. But actually, now I can relax a little bit. Well, I can't.
There's the books that people get through here, they'll be signed and, you know, have your name in it, or you can get a print, and, you know, that won't carry on from after when it finishes. So there is an incentive, but yeah, it's not forced on anyone.
Right. And if I remember right, it's £50 to get yourself a book, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's £50 for a book, and that includes the name of the pledger in it.
Okay, so let's talk about some guitar players.
Yes.
I'm reading back through some interviews before this, and I noticed you hadn't had any... Your one regret was no female guitarists, but I see Chrissy Hynde is now on the list.
Yes.
When did you get Chrissy?
I got Chrissy a few months back. She was the last person I photographed for the project. Definitely up for it, but she'd been on tour, and then she was ill, and you know, and but then she was around, so she agreed for me to go around to her house, and many of the artists, or the guitarists... had, you know, those shoots were done at their houses or studios that were theirs, or, you know, so it was really intimate, which was great. I could have stayed at hers for hours, and we were just chatting and putting the world to rights, really. So she was fantastic, really amazing. And her daughter lives in her house with twin boys downstairs, and Chrissy lives above. And but she's certainly not a conventional grandmother, that's for sure.
No, I bet not. Yeah, she's she's one of the great ones, really. I like her a lot.
Yeah, yeah. She's a very strong woman and takes no crap. Yeah. And I really liked, yeah, really liked my... I had two cups of tea, one before and then one after, and yeah, I was very happy sitting there chatting. But I did try for a lot of other. A lot of people will say, "Why didn't you get so and so?" Or, you know, "Why isn't Eric Clapton in it?" Or, "What about Bonnie Raitt?" And it's like, well, I did actually approach all these people. Bonnie Raitt, I nearly got to photograph, but at the last minute, there was a family thing that cropped up for her, and she wasn't available. And, you know, that's fair enough. And then some other people just didn't want to do it. That's very fair enough too, you know, because sure. it's taking time out of things that they, it's just doing something using their spare time, really, and they don't have to do it. But, you know, I did my best anyway, and yeah. I got some great ones, I thought.
Yeah, well, you got some great names.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed on your website, you have Steve Jones in a Captain America, Evel Knievel kind of outfit.
Yes.
Whose idea was that?
Well, he's a real character. And, when we arrived at his, he... just, you know, said, well, what shall I wear, and sort of pulled this suit out, and it was on the cuffs of the jacket, it had S on one side and J on the other, like Steve Jones, it was an Evel Knievel outfit, yeah. But he just looked quite larger than life in it, and his whole home reminded me a little bit of the Big Lebowski. I don't know why. There was just something, his presence was so large, and yeah, he was good fun, really good fun.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's a great picture.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't like it, actually, but then he grew to like it, so that was okay.
Yeah.
But I just thought it had a lot of character.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
A lot of energy, and yeah.
Not very punk, however.
Well, the whole getting to meet him and everything, it all was quite punk. His email manner is pretty punk.
Oh, is that
and,
right?
Yeah, he is. I would say he's a living embodiment of a, you know, an older man punk.
Yeah. You mentioned Clapton. He's the one Yardbirds guitarist missing.
Who? Which one? Sorry.
Eric Clapton.
Yes.
Yeah, but you did get Jeff back. How was he?
Oh, he was. Yeah, he was great. He was. So he was in London and he was rehearsing in his sort of London apartment, I guess it is, and. With a violinist that he plays with quite a bit. I've forgotten her name now.
Okay.
Anyway, when I arrived at his place, I could hear all this music coming down the stairs. You know, I had to get in a little sort of like, you know, one of those very British tiny elevators that, you know, could only fit a granny and a shopping basket, really. But went all the way up and you could just hear all this music coming down the stairs and they were rehearsing and... He just lives it, doesn't he? He's just very much a musician, and a lot of them are, like, say, Albert Lee as well, you know, he's very sort of very similar in that sense. They're sort of, I mean, Jeff Beck is obviously really famous, but he's a very hard-working man, isn't he? He's just always just getting on with it.
Yeah, he's been on tour almost all the time, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Albert Lee was actually the next person I was going to mention.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, he's another guy who came from a band that your dad had gone through.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, funnily enough, from when I was little, I had a Mickey Mouse autograph book that I guess my parents, you know, started up for me when I was little. And, you know, ever since I was small, I thought, oh, who's this Albert Lee that's in my autograph book? He says, lots of love, Albert Lee. And he was just one of, most of them I'd got my, you know, I knew about, and, you know, but that one was put in there for me. And I was like, oh, Albert Lee, okay. He's obviously someone. And anyway, I told him about it. And when I was doing this project myself, and actually since my little girl was born, it was sort of around the time of the O2 concert, and we thought we'd start up, I suppose, because I'd had a little autograph book, thought it might be a nice thing to do for her. And at the O2 gig, there was lots of, you know, famous people there, and so we got lots of autographs. And I continued it a bit through this project as well, and I said, told the story to Albert Lee, and he wrote the same thing to her, which was quite sweet.
But he's
a lovely man and has just the most amazing smile, and... yeah, really nice chap. And he used some of the pictures that I'd taken for his 70th birthday gig that he had in London, and like had a big projection of it and used it on the programme. And so he really liked it, which is nice.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. The other one I was going to ask about was Robert Fripp. Now, you'd shot Pink Crimson before.
Well, so. I hadn't until I... So I did the Resonator picture first, and through... I knew somebody who had managed him quite well. You know, I knew this person quite well. So he put me in... He passed through the message, and Robert was... Because I don't know how much of this sort of thing he would usually do, but he agreed to do it, and I went down to his house in the countryside. Well, it's out of town anyway, and he was there and just incredibly smart, you know, and I said, oh, you know, you look great. And he said, well, I look like this every day. You know, he didn't dress up for me. He just does look like that all the time. It's you know, pretty special. And his wife, who's Toya, who from my, you know, my early, well, childhood, she was, you know, probably more exciting to me. I was like, oh, my goodness, it's Toya. Because she, you know, as an 80s child, well, I was born in the 70s, but, you know, when I was 10, it was the 80s. So, yeah, she I was quite excited to see her. She was lovely. And yeah, he's just pretty out there. But, you know, he looks like an old English gentleman. Not old, but like a, you know, a proper English gentleman. And then he's holding a very rock and roll guitar. And it's like, I like the extremes, you know.
Yeah.
I quite like photos with extremes, you know, whether it's someone looking really smart in front of a gritty backdrop, or, you know, someone looking very urban in the countryside, or, you know, I quite like it when they juxtapose like that. So
yeah, I know. And actually, that brings me to a chord I stumbled across the years. Is you like the human face of the guitarists?
Yes.
Yeah, which I quite like that. I thought that spoke volumes about what you do.
Yeah. Well, I like trying to capture people as naturally as possible, and, you know, yeah, I think the quite nice thing about this project, I wanted to take a picture of everyone with a guitar, but it kind of relaxed them as well, you know. It was quite nice that holding their prop, it put them at ease somehow.
Yeah, probably would, yeah.
Yeah,
I can see that. Another picture I liked from your website was the Jack White one in front of the stage door.
Yes.
That's almost a story unto itself.
Well, I caught up with him when he was playing London Hammersmith Apollo, and we did some shots in the backstage bit, and he had this amazing guitar, which you might know more about than me. I wrote it down at the time, but I am actually pretty rubbish when it comes to guitars. You could ask me, what's that? And I'd say, I don't know. But what I do know is how to take a good photograph and how to deal with people. That's my skill. I'm not so brilliant on the actual instruments and things, but he did have an amazing, really old, like, army guitar. I think that was the deal. But anyway, I can find out a bit more and let you know.
Yeah,
it looked fantastic, and he knew that it was pretty special and wanted it to be in the photograph. And then as he was playing the show, you know, I sort of spotted downstairs there was that stage door. It just looked cool and, you know, a bit classic. So we did a few pictures out there as well, which is nice.
And then I guess finally we do have to talk about that you took a picture of your dad.
Yeah.
And but it was not the first picture you ever took of him for you did one earlier for the Daily News or something.
Yeah, it was for the Times. It was right. For the Saturday Times, I think. And allegedly, so they tell me when they commissioned me to do it, they didn't know who's my dad. But I was a bit, that sounds a bit suspicious, really. Yeah. But anyway, that was. It's kind of odd because obviously to me he's my dad. He's not Jimmy Page to me. So it's sort of, you know, it is odd because then I still have to photograph him as Jimmy Page. But I really loved the pictures I took of him in Abbey Road. I really liked, because I see a lot of pictures of him, and I kind of wanted, sometimes I see pictures and I think that's not really the way I see him. You know, he sort of puts on a bit of a photo face, I think, sometimes, which a lot of people do. But I wanted to try and get something that captured a bit more of, you know, the real him without the mask kind of thing. Or the hard face, you know, sort of, do you know what I mean? It's sort of like...
Yeah, you're posing instead of...
Yeah, just, the pose, yeah. I suppose that's the thing. I want to sort of go behind the pose a little bit more. So I was quite pleased with how those turned out. And then when I started this project, I certainly didn't want him to be the first one, or, you know, by any means. And I had photographed at least
28, I think, by the time I got to him. And I think he was quite impressed by the fact that I had got a lot of the people that I had, certainly Peter Green, I think, you know, that won him over a bit. And yeah, you know, I wanted to prove myself, not just rely on him again. So that was quite nice too. So he was one of the last ones. After him, I did then extend the project a little bit more from the original exhibition and added Hank Marvin and Jack White and Chrissy Hynde. So he was, you know, towards the end. But yeah, no, it's always a bit tricky because I don't want it to look like too, you know, like a family snap, but yeah. But it has, you know, has to be just right.
Must be a bit awkward. You're almost reversing roles that you're kind of the boss and he's do what I'm telling you to do here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit odd, but it was all right. And he gave me lots of time, probably more time than he would have done if it was just, you know, anyone doing their own project. Right. I don't think he would have done it, would he? But yeah, so I was lucky there.
Yeah. You also shot the O2 show. You mentioned that show. You also shot it, didn't you?
I did, yeah, I did. I had just had my daughter 2 months before, so I was a bit in some kind of weird bubble in my head. I mean, I was there, but I don't fairly remember. I think I was so sleep-deprived and, you know, yeah, it was a bit of a funny time. But and also, when you're photographing such an important show, you're not really watching and absorbing. You're sort of seeing it a different way, you know, through a lens and thinking of it, sort of, you know, like capturing it rather than just sitting back and, you know, taking it all in.
Yeah, you're grabbing small moments instead of the overall picture.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't think I really got to enjoy it in the same way. Obviously, it was amazing. You know, I remember feeling like, wow, this is, you know, really, really great. Yeah. But it would have been also nice to... Well, I suppose, you know, you could watch the DVD.
Yeah. Well, I was actually there, so I...
Yeah. You were there?
Yeah. I did the opposite. The DVD is when I go to look at the details now, because I was there at the back seeing the big picture, you know?
Yeah, well, this is it. And, you know, when you're watching, I don't know if that was happening particularly on the night, but when people now at concerts just always have their phones up and they're videoing or taking pictures, it's like the same thing. You're not really letting it just spill over you, are you? Yeah. You're just focusing on other things too much rather than just letting it happen and just being there, you know. So, but I am quite used to working at gigs, so actually I probably get a bit fidgety when I'm just sitting there enjoying it.
Yeah, really looking for something to do.
Yeah.
Was that the only time you ever saw Led Zeppelin?
Well, I went to Nebworth, but I fell asleep on the side of the stage.
Oh, did you?
I think I just used to do that a lot.
Yeah, you were about 10 at Nebworth, right? So.
79 was it? I was 8.
8? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a little bit young yet.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I was, but I did have a nice little kip on the side. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Awesome.
That's it.
I saw when you, in a previous interview, somebody, you had mentioned that people were, had complained that you didn't have Jimi Hendrix, for example.
Yes.
So it wanted me to think, if you could have anybody alive or dead, to shoot in this kind of a situation, who would it be?
Well, there's quite a few people that I really wanted to get and I couldn't get, you know, that I just missed for the, you know, say, for example, Joni Mitchell, I tried to get and nearly managed to get a contact there, which would have been amazing. And then with all the recent things that have been going on, allegedly with Joni, then, you know, that's, I don't quite know what's going on. But, you know, that would have been really, really special. And then, you know, since people were going, oh, she hasn't got Jimi Hendrix, I did think, well, that would, can you imagine how amazing that would have been? That would have been amazing. But really, while I was doing the project, my real mission at the time was to try and do Peter Green, because he was, you know, I knew it would be quite a tricky one, but I really wanted to do my utmost to try and make that happen. So the fact that that did happen, I was so chuffed with that. So, you know, that was a bit of a personal mission. I just thought it was a little bit too out of reach, but really tried and we got there. So that was really great.
Yeah, getting him would have been a bit like getting Syd Barrett, I suppose.
Yeah,
some kind of reclusive personality.
Well, yeah, he just that, you know, when he said yes, then I just really wanted to make it as painless as possible, and you know, I knew that it, obviously, without anyone telling me, I knew that taking photographs of him would not be one of his favourite things. You know, it's obvious. Right. But he was great. And I wanted to make sure that I got something where he looked like a strong person and not just like, oh, he's this recluse, you know.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, I got a great shot. And I thought, yeah, I was really happy with it.
Good. So you're planning a Christmas release?
Well, so now that we've hit our target, I'm meeting up with the designer on Wednesday, and Wednesday night he's coming round. We're going to get a takeaway and lay out the pages on my kitchen floor, and we're going to try and sort out the order and sort of start, you know, nailing down the design really, and making sure that we're really happy with, because that's what we can know. Now we can get cracking on it, you know, which is great. So we've got to do that and just check all the words are right. And I've said November, which I'd said sort of by November, and I think that's a conservative estimate, and I really wanted it to be this side of Christmas. So, well, it makes sense to do that, doesn't it, I guess?
Yeah, get it out there for Christmas, yeah.
Yeah, and not drag it on either, because I have been, you know, this exhibited a year ago already, the first time at the Royal Albert Hall, and you don't want it to be too long before something comes out. So, yeah, that's why. That's another reason for the Kickstarter, is that, you know, if I'd gone to publishers, we could have spent ages trying to, you know, finding the right person who would agree to do it, and it could take a long time. We just wanted to get on with it and see if we could do it, and we have. Woo-hoo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's good.
Great.
Yay.
All right, so I'm going to leave it there. Is there a specific website people can go to, or just the Kickstarter website?
Well, the Kickstarter has everything on there. My website probably has links to it, and there's also a Facebook page. Well, there's two. I've got one, Scarlet Page Photography, and that has a lot of links from the Resonators Facebook page as well. But there's I think the Resonators one is Resonators Exhibition, because that's how we started it up, so that's what you'd have to search for. And yeah, but basically on my website, it's probably links to everything on there.
Okay, and I will make sure I get links to all that stuff up on my website.
Bless you. Thank you.
So everybody knows what's going on. And thank you so much. This has been an absolute honor for me. So thank you so much for doing this, Scarlett.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Well, thanks for asking me. And, it's a good day to chat, because everything came together today. So that's great.
Yeah, we picked the right one.
Yeah. Okay. Just sorry I'm a bit croaky.
That's quite all right. Thanks, Scarlett.
Oh, no problem.
And that was Scarlett Page. I liked her so much. And I think that kind of comes out. She's lovely. She was so nice. She was so friendly. And, apologetic almost, that she's feeling a bit sick. Well, heck, we all feel a bit sick sometimes. I really liked her. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I think it's a jewel in the crown of this podcast so far. It's one of the highlights of this podcast for sure, has been talking to Charlotte Page. Scarlett Page, my apologies. You know, mentally I've made that mistake 100 times. I want to go Charlotte, and Charlotte's her mother. And I don't know why, but Scarlett Page. And I dug up the website here. It is Kickstarter.com, and then, but if you Google Scarlett Page Kickstarter, you'll come to her page, Resonators, or just Google Resonators Kickstarter, and it'll come up, and you can, like, say £50 gets you a book. £65 gets you a thank you in the book, and so on and so forth. There's various ways to contribute. There's special editions of the book that can be had, and again, you know, funds go to Teenage Cancer Trust, which is a charity. I've promoted it. My Christmas special every year. It's a Roger Daltrey backed charity that Robert Plant is also involved in. So it's come up the last couple of years at Christmas when we talk about the charities. And again, I want to thank Scarlett Page for coming on, for doing this. I told her it was an honor. It was. It really was. Hopefully, it goes very well for getting the book out there, and she makes lots of money on it because she's a phenomenal photographer and she deserves to make lots of money on it. So look, that's going to be it for today. We're already well over an hour, and I'm getting babbly. So next week, here's how the schedule is going to work. I'm going to push off next week until the weekend. So I'm going to try and get something out like Sunday or so next week. And that's because the remasters come out on Friday. Normally they would be Tuesday. And next week I'm back to work, and it's a week of day shift. And day shift's the week we often miss on my first week of day shift because I'm just tired and bagged and busy. So next week, no podcast through the week, but probably drop one on the weekend. And over August, we'll kind of do a couple of podcasts, and we'll talk about the remasters over the next couple of podcasts. There's lots of new music coming in just over a week's time, 8 days' time. And so there's going to be a lot to talk about. So that's what it's going to be next. Episode 103, look for it around August 3rd or something. It might even be the week after before I get it out, because now that I think of it, there's a long weekend in there for us. If I can get it in, I'll get it in. If I can't, it'll be the weekend. So maybe nothing next week. We'll see. But that's it for Ramble On Radio, episode 102. Check RambleOnRadio.com for notes on this week's podcast, Led Zeppelin news and reviews, and any links mentioned in today's podcast. Follow Ramble On Radio on Facebook, Google+, and at Ramble On Blog on Twitter. You can subscribe to Ramble On Radio through iTunes. If you go to iTunes, leave a couple of stars, go to the review section, leave a couple of stars, then leave a review. You can check it out at Ramble On Radio on YouTube. You can go to Spreaker, Spreaker, and be sure to follow Ramble On Radio on Spreaker. Just follow is all you need to do there. And thanks for listening to Ramble On Radio, episode 102. Keep it coolin', babies.
I'm sure there'll be internet forums telling me what I'm doing.
Switch off the internet.